I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network. Welcome to the show.
Yay, it's great to be here.
We're super excited to have you, despite all of our scheduling problems back and forth. So I'm glad that you're here.
I'm glad to be here.
Hello, welcome. So I guess we'll start by letting you introduce yourself. And I will apologize now if you hear me make ooh, noises. It may or may not be because I have the Olympics on right now.
That's fine.
Just letting everyone know.
Yeah, by the time the show comes out, the Olympics will be over, but cool.
It's fine. The gold lasts forever.
Yes, it does.
There we go.
It does not tarnish.
All right. So to introduce myself, I'm Chrissy Montelli. I'm a graduate student at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, where I'm getting my Master's of Fine Arts in Creative Writing, specifically studying poetry. And by day, I work as a graduate assistant in the Student Activities and Involvement Office, advising the University Programming Council, which is our student group that plans a lot of major campus events, including our homecoming parade and our spring concert, in addition to countless others.
Is that that's not like your student government, is it?
No. We have a student government association, but they're different from the University Programming Council.
Oh, interesting. Wow. It's a lot of, it's interesting that you advise one club, not that it's a club, but one organization on campus. Normally there's one person that oversees all of them.
Well, UMass is pretty darn big. Yeah. I think we have over 20,000 undergrads, and we have maybe I don't know the exact number because there are so many, but there are over 300 clubs just for undergraduates. So, myself and my coworkers in student activities and involvement take on the advising responsibilities and sort of split them between us. I actually, in the past, was also the advisor of all of the arts and media organizations and about half of spiritual life organizations. But being that it's my last year of grad school and I'm working on my thesis and applying for jobs, I asked to just, be the advisor for UPC, University Programming Council, because I was really overworked advising three of them. But it's a rather large organization. I would say that we have maybe 80 regular members. I work with I work with an executive board of five and maybe about 15, 16, 17 event coordinators. And we have programming at least every month, as well as a movie series every Friday and Sunday, with some exceptions.
Yeah, ours is very similar to that. I mean, not that many students, but we have a student activities programming board, and they definitely do movies. And we have a thing called Live on Fridays, which they kind of do a show in our Curb Cafe where students perform and kind of do music and stuff. And then after that, they can go over to our Johnson Theater and watch a movie. So it's pretty interesting.
That sounds fun.
Yeah. They have a lot of movies right after they've run. And our movie theater is actually we're the only school with a Dolby Atmos theater. So they're able to do some pretty awesome, fun things in there.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
The student union at UMass is going to be renovated within the next year or so. And one of the things that my students are hoping is that we'll end up getting a movie theater, because that would make the whole process of showing movies on the weekends a lot easier for them. But I don't know if that's totally going to happen because it's still in the early stages of planning.
Movie theaters change things. I'll say that much.
But you got to get those reclining chairs and stuff that they have now, and the footrests and that whole thing, or else it's
not
really. Yeah,
those are pretty sweet.
I remember my first time in one of those movie theaters and I flipped out. It was so cool.
They're cozy.
They are.
I fell asleep there.
The first time I was in one, I fell asleep.
Really?
Yeah, it was Murder on the Orient Express. So, yeah, I fell asleep.
You didn't like that movie? I love that movie.
I liked the PBS, like, Masterpiece Theater Perot better than I liked Kenneth Branagh. I mean, it just seemed like a Kenneth Branagh movie.
I liked it.
Sorry, I just, I don't
it's
know.
Okay. That's the one with the train, right?
Yes, it's the one with the train.
Oh my gosh.
And the murder.
Are you serious? Please tell me you're not serious.
I haven't seen it.
Oh God. The one with the train. My heart.
I'm sorry.
I have to say the most exciting part of that movie was seeing my commercial there, because that's the whole reason I went. Is we had two commercials that we were like doing in the movie theater, and the movie theater invited me and my team over to watch it just to see how it looks in the movie theater, and that was probably the most exciting part of that whole experience.
And the chairs.
Well,
obviously.
I fell asleep in the chairs.
Did they give you free snacks? I would have asked for free snacks.
Actually, they gave me free lunch. So I actually bought, I had like a chicken platter thing and some Sour Patch Kids.
Ugh, that doesn't sound like a good combination at all.
Well, you eat the chicken thing during the 30, whatever they call it now, the 20.
Movie, oh yeah, the countdown
movie,
thing.
Whatever. Yeah, and then which is where my movie commercial was, and then after that. We watched the movie, and about halfway through, I had to eat the Sour Patch Kids to keep myself awake, which, by the way, I failed at.
We heard. So, Chrissy, how long is your grad program?
It's 3 years, which is surprisingly long for an MFA in creative writing. Usually, they're a 2-year program, but mine is 3 years, mostly so that we have, an extra year to work on the thesis. And I'm in my last year. This is my last semester. I have to write a book of poetry for my thesis. And so that's going to go.
Well, what qualifies a book? Like, what if you wrote 3? Is that a book?
No.
I think that's a brochure.
Basically, I think... It's funny because no one in my program seemed to have a definite answer for how long the thesis should be if you're a poet. But I'm expecting to create a manuscript of at least 50 pages. I think that the lowest it can be is 25.
Okay.
But I already have more material than that.
So you're are you kind of like Shel Silversteining it? And I'm sure you hate me for saying that. But it's like a book of just book of works that aren't necessarily related but all kind of feel the same?
I think the approach for everyone is a little bit different. I love Shel Silverstein poems, but the work that I do is obviously very different.
Right.
Because I'm not Shel Silverstein.
Yep.
So my current project that I'm working on as my thesis is a poetic examination of mental illness and how it influences relationships.
Wow.
So I write a lot of sad shit. Sad stuff. I write sad stuff.
It's okay. I bleep things.
You laugh. You're giggling. You're I write really sad stuff, guys. That's nice. I like that topic a lot. Is that coming from personal experience, coming from your experience with students, or just something you were interested in?
It does come from experience. I live with mental illness. I have OCD. I've had symptoms of it since I was really young, but I wasn't officially diagnosed until about 2012, which my therapist conveniently forgot to tell me for another couple years.
Oh, dear.
And, no shade, though.
Not upset about it. Moving on.
The majority of people who I've known or cared for or had deep friendships with, many of them also, deal with mental illness. And it's just a topic that is recurring in my life and my love life. And not that you want to hear about that, but
we don't have a set boundary on this show. Whatever you want to talk about, we're here for you.
Basically, I know more people who have mental illnesses, I think, than people who don't. And I wanted to explore that poetically because it's so connected to my experience of those relationships and like my emotions towards people. And it's just a topic that I feel like I could mine for hours and days and years, mm-hmm. which is how I got like 50 poems about mental illness and love.
I mean, I was going to say it has to be something that you're either extremely passionate about or something that's coming from your own experience. If that's going to, you know, if you're going to dedicate a whole manuscript to it. I've never, ever, ever even considered writing a manuscript of any kind, but I can't imagine doing it on a topic that I don't have a passion for or an understanding of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think, I don't know for me personally if like I write from personal experience because that's what I'm most drawn to, or if I write from personal experience because I'm afraid to do research into topics I don't understand. Like,
or maybe a little of both.
Yeah, maybe, maybe. But, you know, that's what interests me poetically, is like examining emotional honesty and, you know, like giving voice to things that may not necessarily have that voice.
Have you found any other authors that have like poetically or otherwise investigated this topic?
McConnell is a slam poet who I really, really admire. Neil Hilborn, you might have heard of. His spoken word poem OCD went viral a few times, so you might have seen that on YouTube through Button Poetry. Mm-hmm. Button Poetry puts out a lot of good artists whose work deals with this stuff, but it's a fairly common topic, but I don't see it necessarily explored like super in depth, except right. by people who are like very open about their mental illness. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I'm also really bad at talking about stuff that I've read, because as soon as someone asks me a decent question about it, I lose like all memory of everything I've ever done.
I'm the same way. It's so challenging. Mm-hmm. I like have all this information in my brain, but simultaneously none of it is there. I don't like it.
It's like, what's an author you draw inspiration from? And I'm just like,
I'm sorry to have asked you.
It's okay. No, it's fine. It's my own brain's fault. My cat just walked by covered in catnip.
Well, that's always fun.
I wanted you to know that.
Like covered? Was it like rolling? Was he rolling in catnip?
So about like 40 minutes before we started our call, my partner put catnip all over my cat's cat tree, and he was playing in it, and obviously, you know, he was getting wound up and stuff, and then he was pretty chill for a while. Then he walked over to the other side of the room, and I guess he was rolling in it while I was talking to you guys, because it's literally all over his fur.
Oh, God.
It's fine.
I don't like to give my cat catnip, because if like, bugs are out, and she gets all weird, and I don't like her like that. She's just not the same. I just want the old Casey back. What, going back, I guess, to your job, because I feel like we should talk about that a little bit on this show. How is it going generally? We just spoke with, and I know you know him, Danzel Jones, who kind of is in a similar position where he's working as a graduate assistant, but kind of in a job that is not really relevant to his degree. And, you know, I asked him the same question, like, so how do you like it? And I guess, like, you're obviously not earning a degree in student affairs or anything really close. Like, discuss that, I guess, would be my question.
Well, I will say that being that it's my third year as UPC's advisor, I am a lot more comfortable in my role because I've spent the last 2.5 years building relationships with my students. They know me, they know how I operate, I know how to support them. And it was definitely a lot harder when I first stepped into the role, because there were a lot of expectations for me that I wasn't totally like aware of, because I don't have that higher ed background and it's not what I was studying in my degree. Not to mention the fact that I look really young, so my students consistently like thought I was a peer.
Been there, done that.
Yeah, it's
It's the worst.
Yeah, it's the worst. But anyway, about now, considering that I'm going to start applying for jobs, hopefully in academic advising, because I think I'd like to transition into that from activities, I honestly think that studying something other than higher education gives me a unique perspective and sets me apart from, like, other people who went the traditional route. Because, like, I got my start as a college union manager at SUNY Geneseo, and most people don't have that experience. They're usually, like, an RA, or they're in student government. I didn't have any of those things. I was selected to run a building and be a resource for people, and I fell in love with that. And, you know, I applied those same concepts to advising my students when I moved to UMass. And, you know, I think that it's very easy to fall into the trap of what you know when there's, like, a set path for you. So, like, a lot of people enter higher ed by, you know, following certain leadership positions in undergrad and then going directly to get their master's in higher ed. And that just wasn't what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to pursue my MFA in creative writing because I wanted more time to devote to my craft. I consider myself as much a writer as I am a higher education professional. They're both really, really important to me, and I have so much passion for both fields. I didn't want to divulge them. So I have worked really hard to make sure that I'm as supportive to my students as possible. I do my best to think outside the box to help them out. I don't know how to describe a lot of what I do because it feels so innate now, but my coworkers have complimented me for my work. And before me, they didn't really hire, at least my supervisor, Lloyd Henley, didn't really hire that many people outside of the higher ed master's program at UMass until I came along. And people keep telling me that they want me to stay. So I feel like I'm bragging now, which is not what I was trying
brag
to do.
Brag away.
But
you deserve to.
It's
anyway.
Okay.
Anyway.
You're allowed to brag. There's no rules here.
I feel like the path to being a person involved in higher ed is just so cut and dry, and I want to carve my own path. That's the way that I've always been. I've never wanted to do something just because it was expected of me or required of me. I wanted to do it because I was passionate about it. And so I think that, you know, not having a master's in higher ed for me personally is a benefit, at least for now. Maybe someday I'll get one. Like, if I want to, you know, move higher up in the field than just like early level advising. But as of right now, I just want to, like, help students out. I just want to advise students and help them make the most of their college experience.
Mm-hmm.
Have you, and this is something, I guess, an interesting question. Have you thought about becoming a professor?
Funny you mentioned that.
I say that because you can do both. You can be an advisor and, yeah.
Here's the thing. So, my grad program, most of the people in it are funded by teaching the freshman composition courses.
Right.
But I actually got turned down for one of those roles. And that's how I ended up in my position with student activities, because I was like, maybe this is fate. Maybe I should just apply for, you know, student affairs positions. And I honestly like this a lot better than I think I would have liked teaching.
Huh.
Yeah, it's pretty wild because...
Yeah.
Well, for one thing, it seems kind of harrowing to have to, like, control the attention of at least 20 people for a good hour and a half. But
actually, that sounds kind of terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Even aside from that, I'd much rather like working with students to fulfill a goal of theirs, you know, not necessarily, like, impress something upon them that they may only be there to get credit for. Like, what I like about student activities is that they're there because they want to be there. And I don't think I would have made a good teacher anyway.
That's how I feel, truthfully.
Don't sell yourself short, but I think, I don't know. My wife actually does advising. She is she works in our Growth and Purpose for Students office, which is kind of like our student success office. So they help students who kind of not necessarily have lost their way, but kind of don't know what they want to do. Think of sophomore slump kind of situations where, you know, you're kind of you've gotten to college, you had, you know, this dream, I'm going to do this. And then you get here and you're just like, well, there's this other stuff that I like doing more, or maybe I want to add another major, or maybe I want to study abroad, you know, stuff like that. They help answer those questions. And you seem a lot like her in that sense.
Where
you're trying to help students find their place.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. You know, I want them to follow their dreams, and I want to be, you know, whatever kind of vehicle I can to help them get there. So it's funny because when I started at Geneseo, I originally went in with the intention of becoming a high school English teacher, because I thought, as someone who was good at English more than anything else, I thought that was the only option available to me. And then within a semester, I realized I don't want to be in a high school the rest of my life. So I kind of threw caution to the wind, and that's when I picked up my creative writing major. And now I am again, you know, finding what I want to do by choosing not to teach, which in like the literary field is usually not the norm. Interestingly, it feels like, you know, I take my own path in joining these two fields, because the typical way of doing things and making money in the literary world is to teach, to the point where a lot of people just assume that you're doing it. And then in student affairs, it's like expected that you get a master's in higher ed, that you memorize all these student development theories. And I'm just sort of like stuck in the middle as like a fish out of water in both ponds at the same time.
Hey, I know the feeling.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, I feel like it makes my perspective even more unique, because I've learned so many things that I couldn't have learned if I hadn't taken this other path.
Well, as a biology person, yeah, it was, I know how it feels. Like, that's my degree is in biology, and I've been able to use so much of that in what I do. More so than I ever thought, especially the data and the analytics and the statistics and all that kind of stuff. It came in more handy than I thought it would. And the way you think in science gives you a different perspective whenever you're thinking of making plans, making marketing plans, doing all kinds of things. It gives you the ability to kind of look at stuff from a 30,000 foot, and, you know, sometimes it's a little bad because it makes you overthink, but I know how you feel. It's interesting being in that weird place where, you know, you're working, you're doing stuff that you didn't go to school for, but you can still somehow use that. I think that's the beauty of college, is that it teaches us creative thinking, and that way of thinking that allows you to just bloom into things that you never thought you could do.
Yeah, I love that too. That, like, really, seeing my students grow from, like, these insecure freshmen who don't know, like, what they want into, like, really confident and capable leaders. Sometimes I even see it within the span of a year. Like, the growth is incredible, and I'm so proud of them.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I wish I could take, like, your experience and even yours, Logan, and, like, bottle it up and show it to, like, my students that I work with, because they're so hung up on what's my major going to be, you know, what's my internship opportunity. Like, that's, I need to line everything up perfectly to get a job. And it's like, you'll find your path, you know, you find your way, you figure out what works for you and what doesn't, and you grow from it. And I get it though. You know, like, I remember being in that position of uncertainty and what am
There's
I going to
so
do
much
next?
Pressure nowadays too.
For sure.
What's one of the toughest things to teach is that uncomfortable situations and uncomfortable working on uncomfortable kinds of things that are outside of your box, not necessarily uncomfortable in a bad mm-hmm. way, but, you know, being pushed to do this on your own for the first time, or, you know, schedule this, you know, work with people across campus, you know, all those kinds of things. I see that it does make students uncomfortable, but it helps them grow in yeah. ways that when they get into the real world, it's going to set them a bar above the people who just, you know, focused so intensely on this or that, you know?
Yeah.
So that's kind of my way of mentoring students. Yeah. I like pushing the boundary with them and letting them kind of get out of their, you know, comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's a lot better to do it now when you're in a safe zone and you have like someone like me just like step in and kind of help out. But when you're in the real world, you're in the real world. Mm-hmm. And when you're making money from the job that depends on you getting into, you know, doing things that you never done before, at least they have a little practice where it's safe as opposed mm-hmm. to where it's not.
Yeah. Plus, like, having them develop those skills on their own is like such a big confidence boost that makes them feel so much more capable when they finally are out in the real world doing things that maybe they're not super familiar with for the first time.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I don't think they realize like how valuable those types of experiences. I mean, like planning the events that you're like advising them on planning, like that's an incredible experience to be able to say that you did that. Like,
oh my gosh, event planning is so important.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think part of it too is getting students to kind of understand how valuable those experiences are, like big and small, right? Like, so mm-hmm. some students don't, they don't see like planning something that is quote small, like a movie night compared to planning the school concert. They think like, oh, well, I just planned a movie night, but really it's like, well, yeah, you were involved. You like, you were responsible for things. You had to meet certain deadlines. People were counting on you. Like those are valuable skills. So like, how do we get students to like understand that and like be proud of those things instead of constantly like comparing or dismissing like the wins that they have all the time?
For me, I sort of feel like when everything is put together and the student knows that they've done a good job and there are like visible results, like for example, I recently we have this monthly programming series at UMass called UMass Night Out. And the previous one that we had on February 2nd or 3rd, I forget, it's the first Friday of every month. The students who planned that event were shadowing our event coordinators and had planned that for like the first time ever. But it got so many people. They like, it was a like teddy bear stuffing event with bingo and stuff like that.
Fun.
They had over like 400 people. That's and it was awesome. Their first time planning an event. And whenever I see something like that, like seeing students so like proud of themselves and happy with the work that they've done and the results that it's created, I like that, like honestly brings me more satisfaction than anything else in the job to see them proud of what they've accomplished. And then sometimes it's harder for them to see because maybe the process of planning was really difficult, or there's some internal problems that are distracting them, or no one came to the event. And when that does happen, you know, it's my job as an advisor to help them recognize the ways that they did learn from it. And you know, we do this, are you guys familiar with the SWOT analysis?
Oh, yes. I am a marketer. I know them very well.
We do a SWOT analysis for every event that we do. And it's a great way for the students to, like, brainstorm and think about how they can do better in the future. And I think that that's really useful for them to, like, take a step back after the event is over and to examine not only ways that they could do better in the future, but ways to like make the event even bigger.
Yeah. So when you said SWOT analysis, this made me think about it. Like, do you have students that are like all grades, all majors?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Our current president is a poli sci major. We have a number of people who are studying like event management, hospitality, that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
But we have students in the hard sciences. We have English majors. We have really like students from every part of the spectrum. We've got marketing. And I think a lot of that is because the event planning process requires such a diverse skill set that it attracts people from all disciplines. Not to mention, like, my students are all, like, just really close friends. So that in itself, I think, draws people in. You know, students want to belong in college. They want to feel like they have a family. And, you know, in I feel very privileged to be able to work with this one group for a long period of time because I've really like been able to see them grow and develop those relationships and come out of their shells. And if I were to be advising, you know, like about 60 groups again, like I was last year when I took on way too much, I wouldn't be able to see that with all of the other groups that I would advise because I wouldn't have the opportunity to work with them nearly as closely.
Well, I think this concludes your interview that we've been having as to why you should be an academic advisor, and I think you're hired.
Oh, really?
I have the authority to do that.
Cool.
Just generally. Just like academic advisor of life.
Thanks. I would gladly accept that position, except I need to know where it's located and how much it pays.
it is Vetrano State University. I can pay you in cat hugs, and that's about it.
My cat's not very huggy, so I guess I can accept that.
Oh, good. Yeah, because I was going to say I can't really negotiate the salary, so that's all
that's
we got.
Fine.
Wow, but dreams coming true.
If you know anybody who is looking to hire academic advisors, especially in the humanities, I am looking for jobs. So
that I can definitely dig into. And I don't think it pays in cat hugs, though. So
that's
just
fine.
Just saying.
I'll just make my cat hug me.
Offer still on the table.
Not covered in catnip.
So you're concluding then this, like you graduate this spring?
Yes.
Wow. What a long trek. I can't believe you stuck it out for 3 years. Good for you.
Yeah, it was a bit of a process.
I imagine. That is a very long degree. And yeah. You said they're not normally that long.
No, usually MFA programs are only 2 years. Some programs that are really accelerated are only like one. And I think there are a couple that are four, which is really long. But the PhD, I think, is even longer. I'm not getting that for a while either. I'm done with school for a while. I will work there. I would like a break from studying.
I know that feeling.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for this episode.
Oh no.
I would have loved to keep talking to you guys, but if we have to.
Well,
we'll be friends forever. Hey. Now that we're on the show.
Hey, you're a show alum now.
Hey, yeah. That's true. Yes. You guys can invite me back anytime you want.
Yeah, well, you can come back for your reunion year on the fives and O's. Just come back for reunion.
Okay.
Well, thanks for joining us this week.
Thank you guys for inviting me to be on your show.
Yeah, this was great.
And listeners, head down to higher-ed.social and get links to the stuff we talked about today. Subscribe to the podcast anywhere you listen to podcasts. And if you like the show, consider giving us a review on Apple Podcasts. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at HES Podcast. Send us a tweet. We love hearing from you. And don't forget to let us know if you want to be on the show. Higher Ed Social is produced by Emma Hawes and is part of the Connect EDU Network, the first podcast network for higher education. Visit the website connectedu.network and subscribe to some awesome shows no matter where you work on campus. Thanks and have a great week.